Thank you, Phil. Phil, I'm inspired already. It was worth coming just to hear that read. And I think that's going to be the last time I'll send out a biography to any talk that I give. It's embarrassing enough to have to send it out, but to hear it read is beyond call. Anyway, thank you, Phil. That was very well said. I'm happy my wife was here to hear it. She's never heard those things before, so now she knows what I do and what I don't do. Okay, our topic for tonight, I have to be honest in discussing this topic because I looked at the Ak Shmiras Halasha module, the packet 4 that you're going to start, and it has a general goal, and I'm going to violate that general goal. So I really don't think I should continue with my talk. By the way, don't worry, my talk is going to be shorter than Phil's introduction. A lot shorter, you know, as we go. But if you look at the general goal, the goal is the following of the module that you're about to start. It says, to develop an awareness and a mindset that results in consistently thinking before talking. I'm not going to satisfy that, because if I consistently thought before, I would not be giving this talk. And then it goes on and says, and then speaking in a positive manner that is never derogatory or damaging. I intend to be derogatory and damaging during this talk for some elements, hopefully not in this room. And does not generate any animosity between people. I also intend to do that, but hopefully, again, not for anyone in this room. So, unless you are die-hard evolutionists, and if you are, I will stop talking now. So, what are we going to talk about? The evolution of speech. It's interesting. You know, there's a actual technical term that I will just say, and then you can forget the term because you'll probably never hear it again. It's called glottogeny. And glottogeny is, in linguistics, is the origin of language. And it's a study. People have really thought about it and thought about it hard. There are groups around the world that are working and wondering, how did people ever come to speak? Where does that come from? Where does that ability to speak originate from? And it's a very, very tough problem because it has to be approached both from a language perspective, understanding what language is, and from an anatomical perspective, understanding how we have the apparatus within us to be able to speak. You know, if you stop and think about it, who else speaks? You know, when's the last time you were at the zoo? And and did you have conversations with your closest relative, as scientists say, you know, the chimps? You know, what'd you say to them? You know, what'd they say to you? And in fact, what do they say? Did you ever hear a chimpanzee talk? What do they say? Oh, everyone's embarrassed to say it. But then, Ed, stand up. yeah, that's about what they say. And And if you think about, you know, almost any of the animals that one is familiar with, for example, monkeys that, again, some consider very close relatives, hopefully no one in this room, monkeys have been around for 30 million years from a science perspective. And have you ever heard a sentence from a monkey? How about a word from a monkey? And why not? Why not? Why is it that only human beings can talk? If one tries to understand it, and scientists have tried to understand it, and they say, well, gee, that's evolution. But if it's evolution, hey, where are all of the pathways that have led to our ability to speak? You know, how come chimps don't come out with half sentences? And how come monkeys, you know, as you're passing by in the zoo, don't come out with, you know, requests or just say something? And how about any animal? You just don't hear it. Why not? Where are the paths that have led to mankind's ability to speak? And the answer is they're not there. And scientists have looked. In fact, there are scientists that have worked for tens of years to try to train animals to speak. Have you ever seen a speaking animal? No, and you're not going to see one, because they've been singularly unsuccessful in doing it. In fact, a leading group trying to teach monkeys to speak, or chimps to speak, has given up. They say it's hopeless. So, you know, we're just not getting anywhere in terms of doing it. And so one is really puzzled as to where the human ability to speak has come from. Part of the problem is that scientists think that it's an all or nothing proposition. In other words, you can either do it and you have the apparatus to do it and you have the brain capability to do it, or you don't. There's no half-talking. Well, you'd say, gee, we know that animals communicate. Sure, they communicate. But those communication skills are items that really correspond to a human being yelling, ouch, you know, or something. You know, they've been able to decipher something like 8 wild calls of Verdet monkeys. These monkeys have been studied for 50 years, and they've discovered that they have a vocabulary of about 8 calls. Each one to warn other members of the group of other predators. They have a call for eagles, a call for snakes, they have a call for leopards, a call for human beings, a call for men, a call for women. And they can decipher each of those calls. In fact, if they just record them and play them back, they notice that these monkeys will react to the call. So they play back a snake call, they see all the monkeys looking around for the snake. They play back a eagle call, they see the monkeys looking up for eagles. So they know they've identified this, but is that speaking? It's wild calls. You know, it's sort of, you know, the call that you make, you know, when you come home and find that supper's not ready or something. You know, it's not intelligent communication that's going on. And that is the epitome of animal talk. So what's going on, and why have we not been able to discover that pathway for human speech? Well, the answer, I believe, is because there is no pathway. That pathway isn't there. And it's not, as scientists are claiming, as they're claiming with everything else, in evolutionary perspective. It just could not have come about that way. There are books and books on the topic, and each one, with all of its guesswork, really comes no closer to deciphering the problem. And this is just from a language perspective, but there's another whole perspective as well, and that is the anatomy. What enables us to truly speak like we do? We can say a huge, not just variety of words, but inflection, tone. There is no other creature on earth that can say things like a human being. What gives us that ability? And again, you know, you'll see our, again, as scientists claim, closest relatives, and the best they can do is grunt. And hopefully we do more than that, you know, even at a kiddish. So what is it? What is there in our anatomy that allows us to truly speak? The answer to that is known. And what scientists have found is that every other creature, aside from man, has a very different structure, speaking type structure. Our anatomy is such that we have what is called a long pharynx. If you don't know what a pharynx is, you'll now know. We have a larynx. So larynx is essentially our vocal cords going, and that's deep in our neck. Going up from the larynx is a tube that's called the pharynx. That pharynx then connects to our nasal cavity, and that, together with our tongue, together with our palate, form all of the items that we speak. That long pharynx is what allows one to modulate one's voice, allows one to make all of the changes, allows one to sound like a human being. There is no other creature in the world, on planet Earth or elsewhere, that has a pharynx like a human being. Our chimps have short pharynxes, and so does every other animal, and that's why they can only grunt. It is only in man that has this anatomy that enables him to speak the way that we do. But again, scientists are absolutely, absolutely bewildered by that long pharynx. When did man develop a long pharynx? And what they claim is that it's been with man for at least 500,000 years, at least. And yet the evidence that that linguists claim and that scientists claim in anatomy is that one only sees evidence for man using speech for something like at most 10,000 years. And so they're puzzled. Gee, if we've only been speaking for 10,000 years and we've had this long pharynx that enables us to speak for 500,000 years, what did we need it for? What did we use that long pharynx for? And you know what scientists say? We don't know. We really don't know. But not only don't they know, but there's a real problem. Because a long pharynx comes with a price, and it's a very, very heavy price. That price is the potential of choking to death. That long pharynx does not enable one to speak and to eat, to breathe at the same time. And we know there are halachos that one really shouldn't be speaking while one is eating for danger of choking. That long pharynx increases that danger astronomically in human beings. And scientists say that human beings should have all choked to death hundreds of thousands of years ago. How come they didn't? How come we're still around and talking? Very, very strange. And so no one really knows how even that anatomy came about in giving us the ability to talk. What do we say? What do we say? Well, we have a different approach. And we know that that we have the answer to that question from an entirely different perspective. And it's that perspective that I think introduces the module that you're about to undertake. You know, because you really have to think, gee, another module, this is module 4 in Shmiras HaLashon. Hey, what's so important about speaking? What's so important about it that we need another module? You know, why can't we do a module on, something fun like eating or something, you know? And, and we'll specialize in that. And, you know, we'll have group meetings and we'll learn how to cook or bake challah or what have you. Why another module on speaking? Well, I think you're seeing the point. The point is that speaking is totally unique to human beings. It is something that defines a human being, and it is something that defines us and makes us what we are. So that power of speech is, as we will see, a gift from Kutcher Brichu, a gift from God. And using that gift in the way that God has asked us to is probably one of the most valuable things that we as human beings can do. What is the source of our power to speak? What is it that one can tell evolutionary biologists? Well, we know what we can tell them. But what can one tell them about what we believe our source of and our ability to speak is? It's a clear pasuk. It's a verse in the Torah in Bereishis. The pasuk tells us, "Vayitzar Hashem Elokim," that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God created, "Es ha'adam afar," that God created man, "afar dust min ha'adamah," he created man dust from the ground, "vayipach bi'apav," and HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathed, it blew literally into his nostrils, "nishmas chayim," a soul of life, the soul of life, "vayihi ha'adam," and man became, "lenefesh chaya," a living being. And we're aware of Unclus, the Aramaic, authorized Aramaic translation, that what does it mean that man became a nefesh chaya? Unclus says that man became a ruach memalala, a talking being. That essence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave man, that neshama, that nishmas chayim, is what distinguishes us from all other creatures in the world. Namely, we have a high-level neshama. And what does that high level neshama do for us? It does lots of things. But one of the prime items that it does for us is give us the ability to speak. It also gives us knowledge, it gives us our intellect, but the ability to speak is a prime function, and it's spelled out here in the Torah of God giving us our neshama. It is unique to human beings, and that's how we can speak, and that is why we can speak. The Talmud, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Talmud says, quote, Rava bara gavra, Rava created a person. Don't be surprised. The Talmud says that our sages, the Tanam, had the ability to create. Rashi tells us, and the Marsha spells out, that they did this by learning Sefer Yetzirah, the book of creation, and by knowing how to combine names of God in such a way that they could actually create and create what looked like a human being. So Rava created a person. Shadra l'kamei de Rebbe Zeira. He sent that person before Rebbe Zeira. And Havi Mishtaybe, and Rebbe Zeira spoke to it. What did he say? Whatever, good Shabbos, how are you? Shalom Aleichem. V'lo kla mahadrele. And that person did not respond. Amar le, Rabbi Zeira said to that person, Min chavreyat, you come from one of my colleagues. You were created by one of my colleagues. Hadar la afrach, return to your dust. In other words, it wasn't surprising that a person was created, but that person could not talk. Why couldn't that person talk? That person did not have a neshama. That neshama being an item that is only given by Kodesh Baruch Hu. If man ever comes to that point of making other human beings in test tubes in whatever way one can, then will that individual be able to speak? That person won't. And one can guarantee that that won't happen. Without a neshama, speech is something which is not possible. And so we see that while there was a person created, that inability to speak is the identifying mark that rendered him nothing more than being animal-like and not human being-like. So again, it's our God-given power of speech that makes us truly what we are. In fact, that God-given item is a gift, our sages tell us, to mankind. It is such a gift that before we pray to God, before we say the Shemona Esrei that we say each day, we pray to be able to pray. We say to God, God, Hashem Sfasai Tiftach, God, please, help me open my mouth and help me speak to you. It's very interesting that this opening prayer is something that is quoted by the Sephorno in the fact that God gave this ability of speech to an animal. What animal was that? The donkey. The donkey that belonged to Bilam. The verse reads that HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened the mouth of the donkey. By Yiftach Hashem es pi ha'asan, God opened the mouth of the donkey, and the donkey started talking. And that was a gift from Kodesh Baruch Hu. And in fact, our sages tell us that we are to look upon our ability to speak as no less a wonder as a donkey's ability to speak. In other words, that it is something provided by God, something provided to us as a gift, and we should appreciate it. And part of that appreciation is our statement to God before we pray of God, help me open my mouth and speak to you. I recognize that my ability to do so is a gift from you. I thank you for it, and now please help me use it. So again, it's a gift that's to be appreciated, and one should not take it for granted. The module that is being started is one that is based on a verse in the Torah that requires one to make use of that power of speech in a very proper, precise, carefully calculated way. It is a module that can actually be life-changing for those that really engage in it in a serious way. It can change your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with friends, your relationship with others, your relationship with the world as a whole. If one would just follow the dictates of the verse upon which this module is based. And what is that verse? Very simple verse. It's a verse that appears in the book of Vayikra. V'lo sonu ish es amiso v'yareisa me'elokecha. Literally, it says, V'lo sonu, and one should not hurt the feelings of another, and you shall fear the Almighty. One should fear God. Very interesting. Look at the juxtaposition in the verse. It says, don't say anything that will hurt the feelings of another. And the verse then says, you shall fear God. And our sages tell us why that juxtaposition. And they explain that if one is not careful with the first part of the verse, one is not going to be careful with the second. In other words, if someone is lax in terms of the true obligation they have to their fellow man in the way that they speak to them, and they're careless in that regard, that person is going to be just as careless in the way that they treat HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the way that they treat God. Being careful with our speech is a way to achieve a closer relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu, and God forbid, being careless in our speech is a way to break that relationship. And that is the juxtaposition that we find here in the verse. Lo sonu ish es amiso, don't speak in a manner that will pain any other individual, and if you do, v'yareisa me'elokecha, that will lead one to true yiras Hashem, to true fear of Kodesh Baruch Hu. What is it? What is included in this prohibition of lo sonu ish es amiso? It's a Mishnah that appears in the Talmud in Bava Metzia. The Mishnah tells us that just like there is onah, just like there is wrongdoing in mekach and memkar, in buying and selling, so too is there wrongdoing with words. And the Mishnah gives several examples of it. Let's just look at the examples of the Mishnah. For example, the Mishnah says that one is not permitted to go into a store and ask the proprietor of the store, how much does this cost? If you have absolutely no intention in buying that item. Unless beforehand you tell the individual, hey, nice camera, how much is it? I'm not going to buy it. I just want to know B&H pricing on this item. In which case, hey, there's no problem doing it. But going around and pretending that you're going to buy just to get the price is a prohibition of lo sonu, of painting someone with words. The Mishnah gives a second example, and the Mishnah tells us that one is not permitted to say to a Baal Tshuva, to say to an individual who has improved their ways, hey, remember what you used to do? Remember the fun we used to have? Remember going out on town? And, oh man, remember those days? One is prohibited from doing so. Why? It pains that individual. And it comes under not a midas chassidus, not something which is exemplary, but a Torah prohibition. We're not dealing with items that are chumras, with items that are stringencies. We're dealing with fundamental Torah prohibitions in the use of our speech. These items are categorized in the Shulchan Aruch, in Choshen Mishpat, in Siman Reish Chaf Ches, in 228. And the Shulchan Aruch, for example, tells us that, again, one is to be that careful with one's speech, more careful, in fact, than in dealing in monetary matters. Why? Because defrauding someone, cheating someone in money, that can always be rectified. But speaking to someone in a way that is uncalled for is something that cannot be corrected. No matter how hard one tries, it is so hard to get those words back that one has said. And one can live a lifetime of misery over words that one will regret forever having said. The Shulchan Aruch says very explicitly, and that's why we have separate seating in this room, Tzarech lizaher biyoser. One has to be extremely careful with onas ishto, with painting one's spouse, one's wife, with words. One, a separate halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, that one is to be that careful, and not just that careful, but extremely careful with how you speak to your wife. What about wives to husbands? Separate issue. This, the halacha is stated of husbands to wives. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us why. Why? Because this side of the room is more sensitive than this side of the room. And this side of the room has tears that come much more easily than this side of the room. And when those tears come, the Shulchan Aruch says, God listens and listens to the pleas and cries of an individual that has been pained with words and responds to those tears. So one is to be so careful. And again, it's not a chumrah, not a stringency. It's a deoraisa. It's a biblical obligation. Let's look at several examples of what's included in this proper way of talking. It's important to recognize that whatever one says can truly have a devastating effect on another individual. It is something where that pain can be long-lasting, but our sages tell us that even if that pain is minute and only lasts for a moment, it is still a Torah prohibition of onas devarim, of painting someone with words. The general prohibition is saying anything that will give another individual pain, that will hurt them and cause them just to have a bad feeling. And it doesn't have to be forever. It doesn't have to be for a week, for a day. It can be for a moment. And that comes under the Torah prohibition of painting someone with words. There's no excuse. The Pele Yoetz spells out that people mistakenly think, well, they said it to me. They insulted me. They made me feel bad. I'll just do it back to them. That is saying what? It's like someone saying, they said Lashon Hara about me. Now I can say Lashon Hara about them. You've gone through that module. Is that permitted? And the very same thing here. They hit me is no reason that you can hit them back. There is no excuse for onas devarim, even if one is not treated in the proper way with regards to speech that one expects. It's an item which applies to children as well as to adults. One has to be careful how one speaks to one's children. In fact, it is a major chinuch lesson, and hopefully that will come out of the module, that one should train one's children to speak kindly to classmates, not to insult others, not to insult their relatives, not to insult their parents, and not to insult brothers and sisters. We don't know kids like that. You know, these things don't happen in Jewish families. But again, this is a fundamental item based on a Torah prohibition. One's tone of voice is something that comes under onas devarim. If you shout, that's a no-no. If you, in fact, Chazal say, if you make faces, you grimace, and you look pained, and you show a face that is one that, gee, people don't enjoy seeing, and they feel pained by your face, that is an example of onas devarim. One is not permitted to frighten someone. One is not permitted to do it as a joke. Why? The pain that they will feel in doing it, again, is onas devarim. And it goes so far, and I think you can see why this is almost a life-changing mode of operation in being careful with these items. Someone just bought something, they come over to you, hey, how do you like my new car? And you say, well, hey, not bad, but that color is terrible. You know, why'd you ever get a purple top and they, you know, it just doesn't go with those white wheels. You know, and hey, if someone comes over and there's nothing they can do about it, what do you say? Hey, well, what a car. Well, that is really something. And one is careful. You go to a chasana and you're there and there's the chasana and kala. And what do you say to the chasana? You want to cheer him up a little bit? And you say what? Oh man, you know, you could have done better. What? Hey, don't say it. You know, the pain that's felt. You know, people usually say that at the engagement. You know, they don't wait till the chasna. But there are those that wait for the chasna, you know, to let it out as well. It is pain. And that pain is, again, a Torah prohibition. Hey, you have a friend that just bought something, and or you're on that airline, and you've gone through every website to get the best price, and you did. You got a great price going down to Florida, and you got a $9 ticket. Yeah, that actually exists. Yeah, well, the fact that you had to pay $50 for the first suitcase, and an $80 gas tax, and oh, you want a seat? Oh, that's another $26. So you wound up paying $462 to get to Florida, but you only saw it as $9, and you are sitting there in your $9 seat, and you look at the guy next to you, and you say, flying to Florida? Yeah, I'm on the same plane as you. Why'd you pay? Oh, $189. And he thought he got a good deal. He said, I got it for $9. How does he feel? Pained. And again, that pain is onas devarim. It's tempting, but don't do it. Doing something at someone else's expense, making a joke at someone else's expense, is onas devarim if that individual is going to be pained by the joke that you're making. And again, saying afterwards, oh, it was only a joke, oh, I was only kidding, is what? It's like saying, oh, it's only lashon hara, don't worry about it. Hey, there's something to worry about. That was onas devarim. And one should be careful with the items. It is so important to recognize that our words to another individual are words that can destroy another person. They're words that can destroy the confidence of another individual. And one has to be so, so very careful with words that one picks. You can make someone feel successful. You can make someone feel like a failure just with the choice of words that one might use. There are many, many, many examples. And again, hopefully your module, you know, is going to cover lots, and the book is going to cover lots and lots of these. Let's just look at, again, several more, just so one might be a little bit inspired not to talk for the rest of the evening, you know, especially to one's spouse. And, you know, and for example, bringing up events from the past. No. When those events cannot be changed, when there's nothing that you can do about it, and you say, I'll remember when you, and remember when you didn't, and remember this, and remember that, and remember when you got us lost going into the city, and remember, and remember, and remember. What does that do? What does that do? How is your spouse going to feel? And again, they're not going to feel good. And so one is in violation of a teeny little item called a biblical violation. Not so teeny. You're not going to eat treif. You're not going to say these items the next time you're tempted to do so. Remember making a disparaging remark. Who made that potato kugel? What's in it? What's in it? How much pepper did you put in? Is what onas devarim? What do you say? You don't want to eat it? Don't eat it. Why aren't you eating the potato kugel? I'm so full. The meal was so delicious. That last course was great, but I'm just not in the mood for potato kugel. You don't say, this is disgusting. How do people feel? And again, it never happens. We don't know from these things. But these are classic examples of Torah prohibitions of onas devarim. Did you ever tell someone, hey, you are just so absent-minded. You know, where'd you put the keys? Where are they? And why don't you ever remember where you put them? You know, this is the third time this week that you forgot and lost the keys. What's going on? What's going on is a violation of onas devarim in saying something like that. And it goes on and on and on. You don't make fun of someone for being slow. You don't make fun of someone for being fast. You know, the items are all painful, and the items are items that are to be avoided. Someone makes a mistake, and you told them beforehand that they shouldn't do this item. What do you say? Why didn't you listen to me? I told you so. You didn't listen. Didn't I tell you? That's legitimate, isn't it? Isn't it? No way. No way. That comes at top of the list as items that are never, ever to be said. It's as bad as, and there are things that one would never think of doing from a Torah perspective. And yet, who wouldn't think of saying, why didn't you take my advice? Wise guy. Again, we don't know people that do these things, but these are clear Torah prohibitions. And how do you think you feel if you hear someone saying this to another person? It's like seeing someone violate the Shabbos. It's like seeing someone eat treif. It's like seeing someone do open Torah violations. And yet what? We don't think about it. We have not been sensitized to this item of onas devarim. And hopefully this is what this module is going to do. And it gets a lot more subtle than that. Let me just bring one or two subtle examples. And again, there's the things that we never, never do. You know, if you know someone has issues, for example, you don't go over to someone and say, oh, remember me? When you know that no way do they remember you. No way are they going to remember you. You changed your hair, you know, you grew a mustache, you know, and what have you. You know, no way they're going to remember you. And you say, remember me? And I said, no, who are you? You know, they're so embarrassed. And again, those are items that hurt the individual. In fact, if you're even silent, you're silent. You know, your spouse wants to have a good fight with you, and you don't say a word. One doesn't use silence as a weapon. Silence itself could be onas devarim. So again, it's not just words, but it's the lack of words that also come into effect. It goes so far that one has to be so very, very careful that one does not even ask another individual a question that you know or suspect the other individual is sensitive to. In other words, if someone is so totally private and personal, you don't ask them items that are personal and private. Why? To them, it's painful to hear the question knowing that they don't want to respond. Oh, how old are you? Oh, how old are you again? You're out on a date. You know, how old are you? You know, I generally don't go out with girls under 55. But you look a lot older, you know. So, hey, tell me your age. So, you want to see my driver's license? But you don't ask. That's a personal question. And it may make someone feel very, very embarrassed. So, one is to accept other people. Recognize there are differences. And try to catch people doing things that are right, not doing things that are wrong. And remember that these are items that are so basic, are so very fundamental, that saying items that are damaging can hurt an individual forever. and saying items that are proper is an act of chesed that can help an individual forever. And so the module that you're about to start, that you're committing yourself to right here and now, is from now on, I am going to be so careful with every word that I say. What am I going to speak about? You'll find things to speak about. There are plenty of things to speak about. There is no shortage of things to speak about in Torah, in the world, in the wonderful world that God has given us. There are amazing things to speak about. But don't speak anything to anyone that will give them even the slightest bit of pain. Do you think you can commit to that? It will change your lives and the lives of those that you love and that would love to love you if you would only speak properly to them. And again, it's a Torah obligation to do so. So good luck with the module. And if anyone got insulted, I apologize. But that's where it falls. Thanks. Okay, I generally take questions, but Bill, is that okay? Are there any questions? Yeah.
I just wanted to know,
the pasuk refers specifically to fellow Jews.
Yes.
The verse itself and the prohibition. But again, as with many items that refer to fellow Jews, it's a very good practice to keep in practice and to speak this way universally. It's so easy. You don't distinguish and say, "Oh, you're not Jewish. Oh, let me insult you." No. It's not a good idea. It's not a good idea. Yeah. Yes.
You hear people say sometimes, "Oh, that this person gives tough love. That's an important message." So even if the person isn't comfortable hearing it, you can always count on so and so to say that tough love thing. Or,
yeah.
Or on the job, it could be coaching or something.
Yeah. Right.
So how can this fit in?
Okay, good. Tough love, generally is a tough one. You know, tough love, gets you, to that approach of my way or the highway. And tough love says highway, if you don't take it my way. I know a therapist very well, a psychotherapist, and who has never found tough love to be effective. Never. In fact, the only thing that this therapist has told me, has been effective is, aside from prayer, and is one of unconditional love and unconditional care for another individual. Tough love, while you may feel good about it and that you're telling them off and letting them know, can be very, very serious and very damaging. And here we see can truly be a violation of a Torah prohibition. Now, there are times when facts are facts. In other words, a boss has every right to go over to a worker and say, "Hey, when does the day start?" "Oh, 9 o'clock. "Yeah, it's 10:30. It's 10:30. The assembly line's been going without you, and we've been held up." And is the worker going to feel bad? Yeah, they're going to feel bad. But again, that's a fact. That is not a violation of Onos Devarim. A teacher is permitted to say to parents at a PTA conference, it would be good, your child could really use a little bit of help. Maybe you should get a tutor for your child. Are the parents going to feel bad? Yeah, maybe. Maybe they'll feel bad. Is the teacher violating Onos Devarim? No. There's a positive function for that item. And just like with Lashon Hara, where if it's done with a positive intent, it is not the same thing over here. There are positive facts that have to be related, and that is not Onos Devarim. But again, to provide tough love because you feel that's the way things should be done, one has to be very, very careful with. Yes? No, if it is something that will truly be beneficial, if it will truly be beneficial and they can hear it, there are many things that might be beneficial. You know, when's the last time you thought something would be beneficial to someone and you told them such, and well, you know, they just never got it, you know, and you're still trying to tell them such. So you have to be sure that they can hear it, and if they can hear it, absolutely, that's what a good friend is for. A good friend is there to, you know, say items that are actually as they are. Yeah. Okay, we're done on this side. Barry?
You go into what you want to say for Shira purposes?
That is really, you know, not under Onas, you know, Devarim items. Those are facts. It really comes under the Lashon Hara module. And there one really, you know, needs guidance. And it's a major, major item. You know, one should consult and certainly ask a Shaila before saying items. It's not simple, but that's really a Lashon Hara item, not an Onas Devarim item. Okay? Yeah, Ed.
You said something to me that was very intriguing. You said you talk about Onas Devarim, and then you mentioned silence.
Yes.
Well, how could silence be Onas Devarim when it's not even speech?
Right. So I said that the lack of speech can also be painful to another individual. Did you ever hear of giving someone the silent treatment? Right? Silent treatment. I'm not going to talk to you.
Oh.
I'm not going to talk to you. Yeah, how's Betty going to feel? Yeah, no.
Betty,
yeah.
Betty will feel.
Okay, Ed, you stand up, you apologize to Betty, and you say, Betty, it's going to be different from tonight on.
Yes.
You said that it's wrong for a man to make his wife cry with his words. However, what if
unless they're, you know, I love you, and you know, unless you're really. You know.
What if he says something that makes his wife cry, and the wife herself knows that she might have been overreacting, and he really didn't mean to say,
yeah,
you know, something to hurt her.
Yeah. So then they make up. Then they make up. In other words, and then it's all forgiven. It's all forgiven. You know, God, I forgive him. You know, he made up. I know he really didn't mean it. He did tshuva. He's not even going to say that much again, and I overreacted to it. But again, it is. And in fact, it's an important point that you're raising. Yes. And the point is that Onas Devarim is relative. Namely, it's not what you think, but it's what that other person is sensitive to. So if one knows that one's spouse is very, very sensitive, then one has to be that very, very, very careful, you know, as well.
I just wanted to say about that word overreacting, of course, who judges that?
Yeah. And again, it's to be done in this relative way. Okay, thank you. Oh, okay. You know what? We're just going to take two more, and that's it. Yeah.
What's the right way to respond if you're on the receiving end of this type of painful words?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And one should really say, you know, what you've said pains me. You know, it really hurts, and I hope that we can work out better ways of communicating than using painful words. Let's take up module 4 and let's learn it together. And that would be a very beneficial thing. Yeah. Ken, final question.
No, you answered it. I'm not going to get a better answer than what you just said.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, thanks. And again, please, you know, think about it. Don't just think about it. You know, if you're going to say, I'm going to try, remember the very famous words. Don't say, I'm going to try. Don't say that. Because if you say, I'm going to try, that's a guarantee that you're not going to do it. What should you say? What should you say? I'm going to do it. Not that I'm going to try to do it. I'm going to do it. I am going to do it. I am going to fulfill this verse in the Torah of not giving pain to anyone with my words, starting right now. No talking the rest of the evening.